Welcome. We've got our friend Olivier Melnick, Shalom in Messiah Ministries today to talk about the Feast of Purim and more coming up next.
Welcome to Worldview Matters, discussing controversial issues, discerning current events, defending biblical Christianity. No topic off limits. And now, here's your host, David Fiorazzo.
Hey, brothers and sisters in Christ, friends, family, thank you so much for tuning in and for your support. I want to mention, you know, we've been getting donations. You know, we do a fundraiser twice a year because we are supported by you. But, you know, people do throughout the year send in donation. I don't want to miss just telling you about people that are so generous to give donations. So I want to mention the latest comes from James from Tennessee. And we also heard from Jen in California. Tulumni, I think. Cynthia from Florida. Scott and Terry from Waukesha, Wisconsin. Nina from Charlottesville, Virginia, our dear friend. Susan from Kalamazoo, Michigan. Polly from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Julie from Stevens Point. Rebecca from Plimpton, Ontario. I may have mentioned that before, but just in case, that's in Canada for those of you that are keeping score. And also in Canada, William from Maryville, BC, British Columbia. Oh, Cheryl from De Pere, Wisconsin. Thank you guys so very much. We appreciate not only your prayers, but of course your financial support. So today, Olivier Melnick is back with us. We've got a lot of things to talk about. We've talked about his books before, the new anti-Semitism, what's happening on college campuses, what's going on in Israel, in the Middle East. Today, we're going to talk about one of the feasts from the Bible and of the Jews. And look at the book of Esther. But first, Olivier, good to see you, brother. Thanks for your time today.
Hey, David, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's always a pleasure sharing some time with you.
It always is, and it goes by way too fast. So let's get to your blog real quick. I love it. I mean, we need to call out Hollywood for all their idiocy and their lack of biblical worldview and their hostility toward whether that be Christians or Jews. But you've got an article, a new blog on your website in the category Anti-Semitic Propaganda. The Oscar goes to. So tell us a little bit about that, and we'll jump into today's topic.
Yeah, I just posted the article hours ago, and this was a response to a movie called No Other Land that was directed by two gentlemen, one Arab and one Israeli, who co-labored on trying to do a documentary, doing a documentary on the situation in Judea Samaria, in the territory, so to speak. And they're taking this approach in the documentary that they got to work together towards peace. So, you know, if you paint with broad strokes, at 30,000 feet, you go like, yeah, that sounds like a good concept. But then you look at, I watched a trailer and I watched the acceptance speech of the two gentlemen and the way they use the platform, the stage at the Oscars to promote anti-Jewish rhetoric and anti-Semitism. And I'm thinking, my goodness, now I knew that the Oscars, I haven't watched the Oscars in probably two decades, to be honest, but I knew that it was becoming very political. But what was very scary is that when the statements were made by the acceptance speech by especially by the Arab guy, people were clapping when he was talking about we have to stop the genocide, the ethnic cleansing. They were clapping, they were cheering. And it shows you not just the fact that this message is being promoted at the Oscars and you're receiving an Oscar now, but the whole crowd is like going like, I mean, I'm not saying the whole crowd. I'm sure there were people that were probably not in agreement, but they went along in some kind of a cognitive dissonance. They went along to fit in. And at the end of the article, I say, what's next? Are we going to have a new category in the Nobel Prizes, anti-Semitic Nobel Prizes, because that's the next level now.
Mm. Thank you for putting that out there. It's very important. They've been, politically correct or political for many years, possibly decades. But in recent years, it's very hostile toward Christianity. And when anti-Semitism comes in, we need to call it out. Thank you for that. Friends, you can find that at shalominmessiah.com. Shalominmessiah.com. So, the reason I wanted to have you on today is We know there's a need for refreshing people's memory on true biblical history and Jewish history, of course. And I wanted to have you talk about the Feast of Purim. And you have some fascinating connections if we look at Esther and Haman. And I really like what you laid out and explained to me. And I would just love for you to just share with our audience. First of all, we have some new believers and new Christians, of course. So what is Purim? Let's start right there, Olivier.
Okay, so the Feast of the Lords, they're all found in Leviticus 23. There's the Shabbat and there's the other seven Levitical feasts. They're given on the Jewish calendar. And those are set in Leviticus, in the Torah, in the law of Moses. And then you've got a couple more. Hanukkah, which is a response to a festival that we got after the Jewish revolts against Antiochus Epiphanes, you know, before that. And then one more, Purim. So Hanukkah and Purim are not non-Levitical feasts, but very important. Why? Because they're mentioned in the Bible. And if it's mentioned in the Bible, there's got to be a reason why it's there. So the Purim is based on the events of the book of Esther. It's also mentioned in the Apocrypha in 2 Maccabees, which is not inspired, but it gives us historical background. The challenge with the book of Esther is that it was not accepted in the canon very early on, like the rest of the books. It was not, there was no copy of Esther in the Dead Sea Scrolls that have been recovered. So the authenticity was debated. And just for a little side note, the book of Esther does not mention, you know, people hear, oh yeah, the name of God is not mentioned. But in the book of Esther, there's no mention of the name of God, the temple, the law of Moses or the Torah, the sacrificial system, Jerusalem, and prayer. Mm. All those big, big biblical topics are not mentioned in the book of Esther. None of them.
Yeah.
And so it's a very interesting book. And that book, basically, when you read the story in the book of Esther, which is actually what we do in synagogue at Purim, it reads like a play. It really reads like you've got the characters. You've got Queen Esther. You've got Mordecai, her uncle, and Haman, the bad guy, and King Ahasuerus. And it's like a play when the people interact and there's good and evil. And it's just, you can divide every chapter. And we redo this in the synagogue. We read the book every year at Purim. People take turns reading it, or the kids will put a play together based on the story of the book of Esther. And when you think about it, David, the book of Esther is a very powerful illustration of the principle found in Genesis, the early on principle of, that's what Dr. Arnold Fruchtenbaum calls Israel, God's foreign policy when it comes to Israel, Genesis 12:3. I'll bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you, I will curse. So that's a God's foreign policy when it comes to Israel. And I think the book of Esther, the story of the book of Esther, is a perfect example of the blessing and the cursing, because at the end of Esther, Haman, who built the gallows to kill Mordecai and the Jewish people, ends up, him and his 10 sons end up hanging on the gallows, the very curse that Haman wanted to inflict upon the Jewish people ended up being inflicted upon him and his family. So that's a curse for a curse. And it's a perfect example of the an illustration of Genesis 12:3.
It is a very interesting book. And I'm glad you pointed out Maccabees and mentioned those. It's not inspired. What does Olivier mean by that? It's not in the canon of true biblical scripture, although you can look at it for accurate history. There's a lot of extra biblical history, meaning books outside of the Bible that you can find that are very accurate and tell the story of what was happening at that time, you know, about Jesus, even prophecies and things like that. So I'm glad you mentioned that. So what you explained to me before we got on the podcast to me is the most fascinating thing. And you got that from Esther 3. Before we go there, is there anything you wanted to set up?
No, I wanted to say, you know, going back to Maccabees, the way to look at Maccabees, the, you know, first, second, third Maccabees, we get the story of Hanukkah in there. We get a lot of different historical facts that are mm-hmm. that are accurate. Mm-hmm. You look at Maccabees the way you look at the work of Josephus. It's great historical value, not yes. inspired, not the final authority from God's perspective, but it's got historical value. So don't discard it, but don't put it on a pedestal. That's all.
Yes. Perfect balance. Don't discard it, but don't put it on a pedestal. And yeah, good, good.
Right. So the years ago, I was looking at the book of the story of Purim, you know, the hatred of the Jews. Now, keep in mind that Haman, let's start with that. Haman is called Haman the, I have it in one of my in my notes here. I want to make sure I say it. In Haman's, in Esther 3:1, after these events, King Ahasuerus promoted Haman, the son of Amadatha, the Agagite. Haman the Agagite, it connects Haman to the Amalekites, Israel's archenemies. Agag was the king of the Amalekites. You read about him in 1 Samuel 15, 7 through 8, when Saul went against the Amalekites, killed Agag. So there is a long, deep-seated hatred of the Jews between the Amalekites and between the Amalekites and the Jews, and Haman is connected to that lineage. So that kind of puts him in a place where, you know, at the start of the day, at the start of the story, Haman hates the Jews. And but what I found fascinating when I looked at Haman's methodology, I'm looking at how he went against the Jews, and I realized that he didn't shoot from the hip. There was a method. And if I may, I want to point to a few passages, because yes. you're going to find that Haman's legacy of hatred actually paved the way for another attempted genocide. And let me explain that. The first thing we see is in Esther 3:5, when Haman saw that Mordecai neither bowed down nor paid homage to him, Haman was filled with rage. So what you see here is one man's jealousy leading to uncontrolled hatred. Just one man's jealousy. He was jealous, and he was really jealous against one man, Mordecai. He hated the fact that Mordecai did not respect him, so that just... he got unhinged, and that was, he did not take it very well. Then in 3:6, from being upset at Mordecai, we see that in Esther 3:6, but he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had told him who the people of Mordecai were. Therefore, Haman sought to destroy all the Jews, the people of Mordecai, who were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus. So now you have one man is not paying homage to Haman. So now he's going to go after all the Jews. Targeted hatred becomes global hatred against one man. Now it's global. It's against all the Jews. And in 3:13, it says that he wanted to kill and annihilate all the Jews, both young and old, women and children. Keep that in the back of your mind as I'm painting a picture here of this, you know, against one man. Now it's targeted against, it's becoming global. But also what I found out is that the hatred was caused by non-conformity. They're different. They don't look like us. They don't dress like us. They don't speak like us. They don't eat like us. They don't fit. Esther 3:8, then Haman said to King Ahasuerus, there's a certain people scattered and dispersed among the peoples in all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from those of all other people, and they do not observe the king's laws. So it is not in the king's interest to let them remain. So Haman is talking to the king going, hey, help me here. Those guys, they don't fit. Let's get rid of them. And he's trying to show to the king why it's not in his interest to let the Jews live. So the hatred is caused by non-conformity. They're different. They don't fit. They need to be destroyed. Keep that in the back of your mind.
So we already need to take a brief pause here, Olivier. But what's interesting also about this story is Haman convinced the king that all Jews are rebellious and need to be destroyed. Right. This is, you can see that today. It's propaganda. It's really interesting that there's nothing new under the sun. Right. Well, we're going to come back and talk more about this with Olivier Melnick and the website again, shalominmessiah.com. We'll be right back.
Introducing Patriot Mobile, the wireless carrier that stands with you. We are committed to supporting the values that make our nation great. With affordable plans and reliable nationwide coverage, Patriot Mobile is not just a wireless service. It's a call to action for those who believe in the American dream.
Get free activation now with promo code David. So, friends, thanks again. Because of you and obviously under God, praise you, Lord, we are able and blessed to have such great guests all year long, 4 podcasts a week. And so thank you again. The numbers are surging. Not that I'm all into numbers, but I'm told it's doing very well and growing. The audience is growing on Rumble, Facebook, YouTube, Freedom Project Media app, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. So it's doing very well. So keep it going, friends. Thanks for your prayers. So Olivier Melnyk, so Haman, let's just get to your next point.
Yeah.
And I'll just let you take it because we're running out of time quickly.
Yes, so the next point is in Esther 3, 9 through 11. For the sake of time, I'm not going to read the passage. People can read it on their own. But that we see the attempt at destruction being very structured and very organized. You know, Haman says, if it is pleasing to the king, let it be decreed that they be destroyed. And then there are letters with the king's signet ring sent all over the province by couriers to all the king provinces to destroy, kill, and annihilate all the Jews, both young and old and women and children, in one day, the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, and to seize their possession as plunder. That's also something that we need to keep in the back of our mind. And one more thing before I make a parallel here. Look what Haman is saying in Esther 3:9. If it is pleasing to the king, let it be decreed that they be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver. So Haman is going like, I'll use my own fortune, I'll use my own money to facilitate the destruction of the Jews. So now, if you summarize, you've got one man's jealousy led to uncontrolled hatred, targeted hatred becoming global hatred, hatred caused by nonconformity, attempt at destruction structured and organized, and funding coming from the perpetrator. And you look at all this and you go, wow. I see no difference between what Haman did and his methodology and what Hitler did in the 30s and 40s.
Yes. And I think that's a very accurate but fascinating connection that you just made here. Again, friends, go back and read Esther chapter 3 and go really slow when you get through some of these verses because the parallel is spot on. So go ahead, Olivier.
Yeah, no, and another little interesting anecdotal thing is that in 1946, there's a man by the name of Julius Streicher. He was the publisher of the very anti-Semitic magazine called Der Stürmer. And he was found guilty of war crimes. He was one of Hitler's top officials, and he published this magazine and it spread it all over Europe for a long time during the war. And so he was guilty of war crimes, crimes against humanity. And in 1946, awaiting his hanging on the gallows, seconds before his execution, he yelled, Purim Fest 1946, comparing himself to what happened to Haman. Which I think is very interesting. You were saying like, yeah, they're killing me. I tried to do it, and now they're doing to me what they did to Haman. So it's in historical, you know, in the history books. And so Purim, you know, so you look at Purim 19, you know, the Purim, the original Purim in the Book of Esther. You fast forward to the 1930s and 40s and the Holocaust, and you see there's nothing new under the sun. And you, yes. David, you fast forward to today, and you see the rest of the world telling, you know, online, in the news, on U.S. campuses, in books, and conferences, wherever you can find communication that the Jews don't fit. They're different. They're the problem. They're never going to fit in. We need to destroy them. They're trying to control everything. Nothing new under the sun. And apparently people don't learn from history because they're believing that we are the problem again.
Yeah, and that is one of the most disturbing things that we just – well, I think we don't learn from history, but also there's an ignorance of true world history, especially in America, when they have rewritten the public school textbooks and people don't know the Bible, right? So they don't know world history. But so It's interesting that as you mentioned earlier, his hatred it manifested in this plot, and he was willing to put his own money into it. But him and his family were executed. And then take us through the rest of go to Esther chapter 9, unless you had another point to make before.
Well,
that.
Well, no, I just we know we don't have a whole lot of time left. I wanted to kind of I wanted to finish maybe a little bit on a more positive note that. The Feast of Purim, really, even though God is not mentioned by name, it really is a testimony to God's faithfulness and God's love for Israel. And again, it's an illustration of Genesis 12:3, blessing the Jews if you bless them, blessing those who bless the Jews and cursing him who curses the Jews. Mm-hmm. But what I think of when I look at Purim. You know, for Christians today, you might be thinking, what's in it for me? Well, why should I care about Purim? Well, it's a testimony of God's sovereignty. And I'm just going to give you, we don't have time to read them, and I'm just going to give you a scripture to go to just as a reference. God's sovereignty in Psalm 135, 5 through 7. God's faithfulness, Psalm 86, 15. God's protection, Deuteronomy 31, 6. And there we have a responsibility. Christians today, that would be my challenge. You, as a Christian, you have a responsibility, just like Esther said, who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this. Well, Christians, right now, anti-Semitism is exploding. It's everywhere. It's going to get worse in the end times. We are at that time. And Christians have a responsibility for such a time as this to speak up, to stand up, and to join together against the oldest hatred, because that is opening doors in the Jewish community that's going to allow you to share why you love Israel, why you love the Jews, why you speak up against anti-Semitism, and that will give you opportunities for the gospel like you've never had before.
And thank you, Olivier. And Purim is the feast celebrating the Jews' deliverance. I think that's very important for us to recognize world history, and God is sovereign over all this. He made all this happen and intervened here. And I just want to read, we've got a few minutes left in Esther chapter 9. It's really, starting in verse 29, Queen Esther, daughter of Abihail with Mordecai the Jew, wrote with full authority to confirm this second letter about Purim. He sent letters to all the Jews to the 127 provinces of the kingdom, namely words of peace and truth, to establish these days of Purim at their appointed times, just as Mordecai the Jew and Queen Esther had established for them. And then it goes on. It just... And that's just a great point in the book as well, how, the Queen Esther came to power. And just any closing thoughts here? We've got about 4 minutes left, Olivier.
We should start with that, saying that Purim is the plural of the word pure, which means lots, the Feast of Lots, the Feast of Esther, the Feast of Lots. Closing thoughts, I'll tell you, Hanukkah, they tried to kill us, and we got the holiday out of it, and we got special food. Purim, they try to kill us. We got a holiday, and we got special food that we eat. Every festival that we celebrate in Judaism, there's a special time with special food. So to summarize the Jewish calendar, we can do it this way. They tried to kill us. We won. Let's eat.
So we still have a little bit of time left. That's funny, yes, by the way. Yes. We still have a little bit of time left. So let's bring it up to today and what's happening. We've talked about this. Not just what's happening in the Middle East, but the anti-Semitism, the irrational hatred of the Jews. But what we've seen in America, do you see any, I know there's always hope, Olivier, but so hope might not be the right word, but do you see any indication that under the Trump administration, anything can be not reversed, but at least changed when it comes to college campuses and the anti-Semitism we've seen at the university level? Let's just start right there, because that translates into a lot of young people and a lot of twisted thinking.
So under Trump, I think that, yes, we will see a change, because Trump means what he says and he says what he means. So If he says that schools will lose funding if they promote or if they allow things to happen that go against Israel, like in an anti-Semitic way, he's probably going to push that as far as he can, and people are going to pay the price. But I don't think this will end anti-Semitism.
No.
It's only going to stop some people, because the schools are probably going to work harder at stopping it, but it will continue. It's like poking holes in a sinking ship. You know, you poke a hole and then you're trying to plug it, but somebody else on the other side pokes another hole. So it's like, or whack-a-mole, you know, you're like, you got to go everywhere. So basically Trump will probably help, but anti-Semitism coming from Satan himself, who wants to get rid of the Jews, will continue to bring the irrational and make it sound and look rational, and enlist, you know, more and more people that you would not expect. And my big fear right now, is I've been doing some research on that, and I'm writing on it, is this push by the conservative right, and they've always been friends of Israel. And now you've got a lot of conservatives who are turning their back against Israel and pushing anti-Semitic agendas. I expect it from the left, but the right was more friendly. And now there's a shift when the right is also pushing some very anti-Semitic agendas. And that's very scary. Now, it's to be expected in the end times. But yeah. So the long story short, yes, Trump, I think, will help. He will probably punish those who are not friendly to Israel, or anti-Semitic, I should say, but that's not going to stop anti-Semitism. And a lot of it comes from us to speak up, people at the, you know, at the neighborhood level, at the city level. You can't be silent. You cannot be, you know, silence equates complicity.
Yes. And that's, I think that's a good place to end, something to take to heart. Being silent about things that matter. It's what I end every show with. But brother, thank you. You made me want to open up my Bible tomorrow morning and jump into Esther and study that book again. So thank you so much, and happy Feast of Purim.
Thank you.
And God bless you, brother. And we'll see you soon, hopefully.
Be blessed. Thank you.
All right, guys. ShalomInMessiah.com. God bless you. And as always, keep speaking the truth about things that matter.